Hello and welcome to the Serious Games Podcast, all about playful methods for interactive trainings and facilitation. Let's get started.
So welcome back to the Serious Games Podcast. And today, I'm honored. I'm connected with the Kolding Design School in Kolding, Denmark. And I'm connected with Matthias Poulsen. And yeah, we met. I actually had to do a little bit of research, but then I found this email, my ticket from Counterplay 2019. That's the, I think the first time that we met. I think we also talked for that because I offered a session. And today we're talking because you are back. It felt like you've been gone for a while, down under, but you just shared it was just a couple of months. But Counterplay is also back. And of course, I wrote you. I pitched a session. I'm looking forward to travel to Denmark once again. And then I thought I would love to invite you to the podcast and share your wonderful work and your ideas and your vision and things that, you know, you just experience with Counterplay and beyond, and share that with, our dear listeners to see if one or two want to also join me or join you on the play mission. And with that, welcome to the podcast, Matthias.
Thank you so much, Julian. Thank you. I'm really happy to be here. And I'm so grateful for your kind words about me and Counterplay and all of those things. Let's see if we can live up to that. I think you set a high bar of expectation.
We could definitely live up to that. I mean, me remembering Counterplay was just broadening my not only view. It's really broadening the pure. The words are really hard to find, but it was opening a door to a world of play and to nuances and to people who not just do that for a living, but live it, right? So play was really transformed in that sense from, let's say, a line of work, something that you do, that you research, to a stance, I guess we can come to that, but maybe also a way of showing up. You know? I think that's the best I can put it. And we'll have many more ways of putting it. So that's why I will start with my two typical questions. What should our listeners know about you? And how would you describe, you know, the elevator pitch for Counterplay in 30 seconds? Someone who has never heard about Counterplay, what must they know?
Okay, thank you. That's, of course, a difficult question. I think about me and Counterplay, those two things are intertwined in a way. And for me, the most important thing is that I guess that I'm on this sort of pursuit to live a more playful life. That is really what guides a lot of the work that I do, that I hope that I can live a more playful life, but also that through my work I can help even just a few people, that we can get together and help each other live more playful lives. So that's I think the main catalyst for all of this. And for Counterplay, I think it's a festival that I started for us to have a sense of community, of belonging to a play community, so that the challenge of being playful, of holding on to play through our lives as we age, would be perhaps less daunting. Like, it seems like we give each other a little bit more courage when we actually come together as a play community, so that that we dare to hold on to play, to insist on play, even in situations, you know, where it's not expected or where it's maybe even frowned upon. Then we know, oh, but we're part of this community. We're not alone. We have each other, even when we're not together. And I think that sense of a play community is the main, what do you say, contribution, or the most important thing for me about Counterplay is that we make each other more courageous when it comes to,
yes,
to holding on to play.
Yes, I remember 2019, the title was Playing at the Edge, right?
Yeah, I think you're right, yes.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. And there were, you know, lots of interesting. In fact, I remember there was a little TV, not documentary, but a little TV piece. I'll link it in the show notes. But let's go back. I really want to rewind to maybe that first moment when you in a conversation, you alone, thought about something like a festival or a community. Can you share a little bit how it all started?
Yeah, at least I can try. It's been a while, so maybe my memory is not as accurate as it used to be. But I think that we are around 2012, 2013, and I was working actually back then with digital games, game-based learning, stuff like that, and it was sort of a growing field, and I was super curious, but at some point I realized that maybe I was more interested in sort of the stuff that happens between the players rather than the games themselves. And I couldn't really, you know, this took me a little while to figure out, but I realized that, oh, but maybe it's the play that happens between the players, maybe sometimes with the game, but sometimes also between the players. So I was like, my attention shifted a little bit back then from the game to the play experience and to the sort of playful encounters. And to be honest, at the point, I just felt like I didn't really know anything about play. Like I knew something about games, but I didn't know so much about play. And my, I don't know, for some reason, my intuitive sort of idea was that, oh, but maybe we can create a space where we, like, I need to learn about play. So that was my egoistic sort of, I need to learn a whole lot about play if I am to work with it, if I am to do anything with play. And I just figured maybe we can create a space or a community or an event where more people would join me in learning about play. So it started from my own need. And then I just sort of had some very basic ideas, I would say, at the time. I had a feeling that it needed to be playful, like it needed to be learning about play through play. Because, of course, we have probably all attended too many conferences and other kinds of sessions about play, but where play is too absent. So that was like a principle I knew from the beginning, that we need to try to cultivate actually a playful atmosphere at this event. And then I also knew from the start that because I was an adult and I was interested in play also in my own life, so I was like, oh, this cannot only be for children. Like this needs to be play across the lifespan and also across sort of the different arenas that we move in across society. So it needs to be in education and in work life and in sort of public life and in our spare time and everywhere, like everywhere play could take place. And I think this was basically what I knew from the beginning. And then I started talking about it and sort of talked more and more, and was kind of maybe a little bit annoying at times because I really wanted to do this thing, but I didn't know how. And at some point, one of my friends at the main public library in Aarhus, where I live, said, well, Matthias, this sounds like a nice idea with this play festival or whatever you're talking about. You can borrow the library for free. And then I was like, okay, now I guess I have to try. And then I created more or less meaningful invitations for people to contribute. It was always sort of as something that we do together in a way, right? People share their work and we come together. And from the outset, there was I was really overwhelmed back then, and I still am, that people are so keen to do so much work, to travel to Denmark, to come to either a library or now a design school, and share their work in such a vibrant manner. Like they're really, really passionate and they really sort of want this this or that way of thinking and doing play to exist in the world, and they want to share it with the community. And that sort of was present, I would say, already from the first time, which was back in 2014.
Yes. Yes, wonderful. Yes, and you called, and I assume it grew, you know, from artists to academia, policymakers, I you know, met so many different disciplines and people that shared, as you said. What is your, I mean, now that you've experienced so many counterplays, so that was the idea, it happened. What are your, you know, surprising or magic moments of the counterplay movement festival?
I think from the outset, but it became more clear over the years that what I've really been drawn to are all the things that emerge. So we schedule, we plan a lot of things. We have like always too much, you could say, in the program. On the menu, there are so many things to choose between. And all those things are important because they sort of get us going and they give us ideas and all of that. But I think what really comes to matter for me are the unplanned things, the things that just happen because people are in the spirit of play. And then they need to do this or that. They need to sort of start dancing when it was actually not intended, or they need to dress up and make costumes when it was not part of the session. Or they, like, all these little moments where people sort of somehow hack the festival and do something else. And I think those are the moments that I really cherish. And I think they matter so much to me, both because I see that they show sort of some ownership. Like, this is not just them passively attending an event that I have organized. That is them doing something with that event that is surprising and fun and playful. But also because it shows something about who they are. And I think what I'm really moved by is that people come to this event in Denmark, and a lot of the people there would be strangers to them. And yet they still step into this space and they find this playful energy somehow. And they, at least as we spend some time together, 2 or 3 days together, the, you know, the normal sort of facade and appearance that we have when we go into public space, it sort of falls away a little bit. And we're not pretending to be something. We're more just people who are there without that facade and without that sort of usual distance we could have, and like we just allow ourselves to be really present in that moment with each other, and that's sort of a vulnerable position that I can never take for granted that people will step into. But I have just seen it so many times that people realize that, oh, yes, I came maybe to counterplay as a professional, if you will, like with a professional interest in play, but at some point it becomes personal, and then we are just people who are together and who are doing perhaps very silly things because we're playing together, right? But it points to something, or it allows us to share something about ourselves that are more deep and more personal. And I think that is really the magic for me, sort of, where whenever these little moments happen.
Yes, I'll rewind and have a listen once we stop the recording, because maybe that could by itself be part of a definition of play, right? That we gather, that we show up, that we agree to not, you know, play with that facade, because then it will become not really, I mean, obviously not really voluntarily, but it will become a very awkward experience. But showing up and sharing, and I remember so many sessions where exactly what you said, right? The presenter was sharing not a fancy tool or framework, and not their ego and you know their alphabet soup of, you know, badges and certificates, but really what they are passionate about, or what they believe in, if we exaggerate a bit, and what their current focus is, knowing that time is limited, 2 to 3 days, but also knowing that that's their focus, and respecting and welcoming and being not only approachable, but being wanting to be approached to also learn and connect with others, right? And that's lovely. Yeah. So now I remember me flying this bird through the library. That also happened. So there are two things now. I heard you say on the one hand, yes, the community, and then the festival. So maybe I want to start with the community. So beyond those 2 to 3 days, what is something that you are that you observed, or something that you're proud of, or something that you see where is the DNA of Counterplay when the festival is over?
Yeah, that is, you know, that's a little tricky, right? Because it's hard to get a hold of what happens when people leave. And I can only point to, of course, some of the situations where they have shared something with me. And I think one person told me at some point, I asked in the community, like, would any of you be willing to share something that you have taken from Counterplay? And there was one person who sort of said it explicitly that, well, part of it is that because we do this together and then we go all our separate ways all over the world, right? But we carry a little bit of that spirit and a little bit of that courage with us. So we go and we still feel that play is legitimate. We still dare to play because we know there are all these people out there, that we've had these fairly deep play experiences and connections with. And because of that, we're maybe a little bit more confident that it's actually okay, that we can actually sort of insist on play in our lives, even though we are, most of the time, we are not in that community. We are sort of, that is scattered all over, right? So I've heard that from several people sort of tell me that in various ways, that maybe this is the most important thing about it, is that it's actually hard to be very courageous about play if you're only on your own and if you always have to fight for play on your own. So you need friends and you need a community for that. And there's something about how that being together really intensely for a few days, it creates a sense of community that reaches beyond the event itself. So I had, now you mentioned my trip to Australia earlier, and one of the first people I met when I was there was my friend Troy, who was also a Counterplay back in 2019. And this was like almost 4 years later. And the first thing he said to me was, hey, we've been talking about you in Counterplay here in Melbourne. And I was like, I hadn't heard about it. And of course, I loved the idea. But this sort of, you know, it travels on, it lives on. People don't really forget about it because I think it is such meaningful experiences and relations that we have with each other when we play. Yes. And it's not, I don't want to make it sound too sort of complicated or difficult to achieve, really, because it's not. But it is just those, if we really give in to those play experiences where we allow ourselves to just be present together, then I think that stays with us. And that gives us, for me, it gives me hope, and it definitely also gives me the courage to speak up for play in other situations outside of that event.
Yes, yes. Well, for me, it's a, you know, when we show up, when we are present, when we show up as human beings, ready to show up and willing to show up, and then it's, is it like a pure connection, a pure relationship, and if that moment, right, that can happen, and that's way more lasting and enduring and resilient than, again, if we would just meet and exchange, you know, business cards or be on our facade and I'll show you, you know, my MBA and then you show me your, you know, PhD, and so yeah, got you. I remember, and I still I will send it her way, but of course I still, when I look at the little fox that I gave to my son, of course I remember Foxy, and I hope Foxy is doing well and that is good. Wonderful. You mentioned it shouldn't sound too complicated, but how would you explain, or how would you invite a newcomer to the festival? You just released a program. I'll link it in the show notes, you know, and all good. there's a lot. You already mentioned that. It can feel overwhelming. There might be the fear of missing out just by looking at the poster and seeing, wow. How would you invite a newcomer to approach their first visit in Kolding now?
This is something, of course, that I've been thinking about a lot over the years, and I would say I probably haven't sort of gotten it completely right, but I am really always hoping, and we are always trying to make it also intriguing for those who are not already in the community, because it's really important that new people step in. Like it cannot become just a closed, exclusive club. So we want that. And at the same time, we're trying to push sort of the envelope or the idea of what can play be. And I think sometimes this is a balance, like do we want to make it really easy to understand, or do we also want to sort of be a little bit radical and sort of go a little bit too far in some ways, making it a little bit too daunting or intimidating. Some people have told me that the way we write about it and talk about it is a little bit intimidating, and so we're trying always, both in the writing, in the call that we have, and in the updates that we make, to at least make it sort of personal and make it like try to build up to what is hopefully experienced as a fairly safe space where you can step in and where you don't, like, as long as you are human, fit in perfectly. You don't really need sort of a long experience with play, and especially not in a professional capacity. Like, I really mean that everybody can step into that space. And I've seen a lot over the years that because the community is really kind, and because we try from the outset to say that it's all voluntary and like we really support any way of participating, then it seems like those who are new actually find their way in and sort of become safe and confident in what is initially, for a lot of people, sometimes myself included, really confusing and a little crazy and, you know, many things going on. But I think there's still something to be worked with in terms of the whole build-up to the festival. Like, if people come to the festival, then I'm not concerned. Like, then it will work. Then they will find their way. But do we communicate about it in ways that are alienating some people? I'm pretty sure that we do. And I don't know, that's a risk or a balance that we're trying to manage.
Yes, got you. I was just thinking, I'll pull up some pictures and add them to the podcast. You know, some podcast players do show pictures while we talk. And I mean, how do you ultimately describe an experience, right? It's like describing a game, right? a playful encounter. It's like, okay, what is it like? And then the moment it happened, it's gone already, right? So the next encounter will be different ultimately because you already played it, or someone new is joining, or something else happened, and we're in a new state, in a new way of thinking or feeling at that very moment. Yes. Maybe that video could also help. And then always reaching out to someone who has maybe been there, right? And who has own experience. I also remember, portraying players of the community and how they contribute is also a nice way, and then definitely a conversation starter. Wonderful. So tell me... before I ask you about the festival, okay, again, we can go through the specs and the program and you can share a little bit more about that. But then you mentioned just on the side, like, oh, you know, in a community, we're not alone. We know there's someone else also fighting for play. I wanted to ask you, when do you think, I mean, we agree, you know, play is learning, play is life, play is, you know, experimentation, et cetera. Okay, we can pull up some definitions. But when did it become that thing that we had to fight for? And you said in your welcoming, you know, helping others to live a more playful life. But why and when did we start or see the need? When did the need emerge? Putting just that question together while I'm thinking, but when did the need emerge to fight for play, playful moments, playful encounters, play in general? And then what's on the other side if we achieve that? So if you helped someone to live a more playful life, what is in for us all?
I probably can't answer that sort of, you know, when did that become important? But I think that there has been some, like, play used to be more common actually, and also for adults, like going back, then it was something that we probably all did in various ways. And I think play has become marginalized in society for a lot of reasons. Like, for instance, the idea that we need to be able to control ourselves and control what we do and be these sort of really rational individuals who can make rational arguments and sort of keep our emotions in control and all of that. Like, there are some ideas around this that both come from Western philosophy, but also has been sort of ingrained in more neoliberal trends and such, about like we need to optimize, we need to always also know where we're going and know what we get out of things. And I think play it doesn't really fit within that optimization, both sort of individual optimization and optimization of outcomes and results and all of that. So play is kind of, to me, it's sort of a force of resistance in a way that insists that there are other ways of being human, other ways of being alive, and for me those are ways that are more relational and more unpredictable and more about being in the moment with what emerges. So I think that we need to fight for it, because there are a lot of dynamics and sort of trends in society that makes it harder, that sort of reduces the space we can have for being together in playful ways without knowing where it's going or what comes out of it or how we can measure it, or like so in that sense it's up against some strong forces that I think we need antidotes. Also, play is kind of a little bit of an antidote to some of those modern Western ways of being in the world.
I was just, just thinking, I was on a book release here in Berlin, the argument was, play is literally a cultural asset and we should see it as art. As you mentioned, right, it doesn't really fit in that, work optimization flow line, and neither does art, right? Neither does do a lot of things that we do in our free time, and even if we eventually become better or not, but that might not be the goal in the first sense. And still, when I was thinking of a question, but how does it connect to work, and the economy, besides being a business, that's I think a different podcast episode. But still, when designing an organization, learning, etc., we do need playful moments, obviously, and playful encounters, because that's where also we draw inspiration from, or where new ideas emerge, right? Where the unplanned can happen, not only a dark horse from a design thinking approach, but just those moments where we can meet, show up, and then back to what happens at the festival, where we can show up as human beings and really talk without that facade, what the need is, what the concern is, what the fear is, what the emotion is that is connected to something that is happening or not happening. I was wondering, what does fighting for play look like then? I mean, not everyone can now start a festival or write a book about it.
No, and then maybe I got it wrong from the outset by talking about fighting, because maybe that's not what it is, right?
But it's literally it's standing up for, right? I mean, yes, I hear you. It's really standing up. It's putting it on the table. It's also it's removing that blind spot that play is also available to us
as
a species to move on.
I think at least for me, I think that I've realized both for myself and the people that I meet and work with that there are actually a lot of ways that you can do this work, and I would be really reluctant to sort of make the recipe and say like this is what you need to do to be a proper play activist or whatever a title that I have given myself some years ago. And I think this is actually what's important. Like if we want play to have like better conditions to thrive in society, which is often what I sort of tell myself that that is what we need to do. We need to create better conditions for play to thrive. Then I think that there are so many things that we can do. Some would probably like just figure out how could they create small pockets, small opportunities, small invitations to play wherever they are. Whether at their workplace or in their local communities, could they just make it possible from time to time to meet through play or to have small playful encounters? I think that's often a really meaningful place to start. And I think we shouldn't underestimate that kind of work, sort of local on the ground, actually creating opportunities for play. And it can be setting up a game, or it can be just be like little sort of silly encounters. So there's so many ways, you know, like my friend Bart from the Netherlands who insists on the blowing big soap bubbles, like always create a sense of wonder. And I think all those actions are actually sort of standing up for play and insisting that play has a place in our lives. And then of course I also think that it's interesting to talk about it as we do here, to do research on it, to try to understand what it is, even though we're bound to fail, like we'll never fully understand play. But I think if we try to keep sort of cultivating our language and our thinking and pushing it, and then that will also help us. So the more that we can do to make it visible, to make it felt, I think the felt part is super important. Like when people have the experience of play in their bodies, it's a different conversation we can have about play also than if we just sort of talk and stay in our heads as we often do, right? So if we can create opportunities for people to have the experience that play is like meaningful, fun, all the things that it is, and that it's legitimate, and then from there, we can do research, we can have conversations, we can spread the word, we can invite more people in. But actually, I think that the play experiences are sort of a core element in any sort of, standing up for play.
Absolutely. And I was also thinking and looking at a couple of notes, those playful encounters and moments, we have different labels for them in different, occasions. Of course, in the business world, it would be, a brainstorming or innovation workshop or a creative workshop. And, let's go and walk and have conversations, right? To embody something. So it's just different labels. But if we could also see and then, with research, with thought leaders, with, moments where we talk about play that, at bottom line, that there are some similarities. Oh, bottom line is, we're showing up, we're meeting as, we agree for a different type of rules than the ones that we were born into or socialized in or grew up in or working for, right? And now something else can happen, and I can within myself, and I can show up in maybe a different way, or I can show up a part of myself that I might not show up at work or at some other play, and then and learn and grow from there.
Absolutely.
Wow. Interesting. I mean, there's so many things I just have, and I'm looking at the time too, but just a couple of quotes here, right? Maybe I'll ask you another theoretical question here. So when was your, playful life, right? When was your last playful moment? And I really am looking for something where you said, wow, maybe something where you surprised yourself, where you said, oh, interesting. Yeah, I where you could really not only feel but also reflect on it, or maybe not in that moment, but maybe in that moment where you thought, oh, I've never done this before. Can you share one of those?
Well, even though I'm fortunate both with Counterplay and with my job in general to work with play, then I also have days where it's absent. So I'm really trying to cherish whenever it happens, also in a work setting. But the first thing that came to me is my maybe most recent obsession, where that I've been surprised by, because a little over a year ago we got a horse, and then we got a pony, and then the first horse got a foal. So then now we suddenly had three horses, and I would actually say that I've been playing a lot with those horses over this past year to get to know them, to figure out what it means to live with horses. Mm-hmm. And there's been so many surprises in that. It has really made me think about sort of the human role in relation to animals, for instance. Just because of these little silly playful encounters, maybe especially with the foal that's very playful still, stealing my cap and doing all sorts of silly things, and I'm just playing along. So that's really a recurring sort of thing that I do every day. The horses remind me every day when I go to them, and whether I go to feed them or just to hang out with them, they remind me to play in various ways. And of course, I really appreciate that, both because I appreciate any invitation to play, but I also sort of, it's just a different, it provokes my thinking about human play when I'm this close to big animals that also insist on playing in a different kind of way. So that would be one example I talk way too much about the horses these days, so I always bring them up. But I also really appreciate, I have this regularly, these little encounters with Camilla, my wife, with my friends, with a lot of my colleagues, you know, that are just these little sort of silly moments or small exchanges or a little comment in the otherwise serious email, or all these little sort of cracks, you know, because we're all also trying to be professional and serious and all that, but then it sneaks through, and people have all these little ways of showing their playfulness. And that is really maybe one of my favorite things, like where it shows, even though that maybe we try to hide it a little bit, or maybe we try to fit in and we try to be that serious adult, but we cannot hide it completely. And I just really, really love that, because every little opening, I think, is sort of the possibility for play to really grow and really take over and really be the way that we are together.
Yes, wonderful. And maybe, Matthias, I'll steal that word of unhiding play rather than fighting for play, right? Like, okay, pointing to it, right? And maybe pointing to the other side, right, of the medal, saying, oh, well, this is very serious now. And
of course, it's like when I say serious, it's a certain kind of seriousness, right? And we all know this sort of adult professional seriousness, because I always insist that the most serious and ambitious people I know are the play people. Like they're super serious, but they're serious in playful ways. So of course, we also need to somehow overcome this dichotomy between play and seriousness, because it's only a certain kind of seriousness that doesn't really fit within play.
Agree. And you know, I mean, now this podcast is called the Serious Games Podcast. I'm not sure if I should. I will change the name at one point, but yeah, actually, that's, and I was having a discussion actually on that name just by naming it serious games, that forces us to, oh, then there's a game and then there's a serious game. It's like, no, this is all playful moments, playful invitations. And then, yeah, sometimes they come with a board and with some set of rules, but then sometimes not. So, yeah, true. Wow. Walk us through this year's festival. So I know it's the first time that it will happen in Kolding. So not the library anymore, even though I can totally recommend to drive up to Aarhus just to look at the library and to spend time there, knowing that they also have a playroom upstairs, but there's also lots of other wonderful things that you can do there. What is the program like, and who resonated with your invitation, and what is maybe something also that emerged or changed or was improved or optimized for this year?
Well, first I want to of course agree with you and say that Dock One, the library we used to have Counterplay, remains a wonderful place, and there's a part of me that is a little bit sad that it doesn't take place there, because it was a fantastic venue for a play festival, and it was also an extremely supportive just organization and the people who work there. So I would have loved to continue there, but at the same time, it also made a lot of sense to move the festival to the design school, where we have a lab for play design and an MA in design for play and all that. So it fits really well also here. And we're still basically trying to figure out what that move means and how it's going to play out. So it's a big experiment, even though it's the sixth time we do it. It's still a big experiment, and we don't know exactly how it's going to go. And I'm not sure that I, you know, can or will, or I don't know, I'm able to sort of point to very specific sessions in the program. But I think one thing first that has surprised me and really overwhelmed me in a great way, like really given me the energy to work on this again, is that it's been 7 years. And then we put out this fairly, I don't know, strange call with both some really serious sort of academic stuff and some super silly, playful stuff. And we merge it all together, and we insist that it can coexist. And we just sort of cross our fingers and hope that it will resonate with someone. And then it does, apparently, because we did get like more or less as many submissions as we used to get in the past, even though for some it's a new thing, like it's almost like we start over, right? So there's the energy in the play community, and the play community is still alive, and it's also growing, because we also got a lot of submissions from people who haven't been here before. So I think this is a wonderful thing in and of itself, that we can sort of not, I wouldn't say the call for play that we made was that accessible. It was a little bit sort of demanding of people to think with us and to play with us and to actually sort of really step into that. But people did that in so many different ways. Because again, like I would say in the past, it's really a wildly diverse program. And we're trying to cultivate this. I sometimes say that we're trying to cultivate this landscape of play that you can go exploring during those days. And I think that we're doing that again, like we're creating this landscape where some moments are shared between all of us, but most of the time people will go exploring, go on all these little adventures, because we have all these parallel breakout sessions. And some of those sessions are role-playing activities, and some of those sessions are urban play sessions where you go out into public space and you play. Some are drawing, sort of playful drawing sessions. Some are building a den to hide away from the world session. Some are conversation games. Some are sort of poetic, playful writing sessions. And they're really sort of all over the place, and some of them are maybe a little bit more sort of leaning towards adults who work with children, but a lot of them are more towards just, you know, adults who would like to bring play into their lives. In some cases, for adults who want play to be in their work lives and to sort of help them in organizational issues and, yeah, as you talked about, creative processes and all of that. But I would say a lot of it, and this also really excites me, a lot of it is really sort of for people who want sort of a play, more playful way of life. Which, of course, as I've already revealed, is also my own main motivation for this whole thing. So that's very nice to see that for a lot, what seems to really resonate is not any sort of instrumental, you know, quality or what can we get out of play as such, but more how do we become more playful people? How do we live more playful lives? And maybe, maybe also like, I've tried to say over the years that maybe part of this is how do we cultivate more playful societies that we can then live our playful lives in. And I think that there's quite a lot of that in the program this year. And I'm very, very excited about that.
Wonderful, wonderful. Yes, and once again, I'll link the program, and then with the program, you know, everyone can look at these sessions, the hosts who are facilitating or sharing in that session, and ultimately, that's already part of the play community that one can meet in Kolding and many more. Yeah. So, can you also give us the specs and the size just a little bit, just so we can have a more concrete idea. So what is the date? Even though I will link everything.
It is from May 7th,
yes.
May 7th to May 9th.
Wonderful.
And it's Thursday, Friday, Saturday, those days. It's the same sort of, it always used to be those days. And then we have, 2 days full on playing together, where we, every day we sort of have some shared moments in the morning and the afternoon, and then we have breakout sessions with, I think in most cases, 5 parallel tracks that you could go and choose from, so that there's always something, like for all the different play tastes, that there's also hopefully always something that appeals to everyone. And while we don't know yet, then we're sort of aiming, expecting, hoping for around the same sort of size of the group, which was always 150, 160, 170 people, something like that. Maybe a little, somewhere in that ballpark, right? And it just means that we're a nice, big, but not that big group of people who have 3 days in May playing together, basically all the time, right? We have things scheduled from morning to evening. And I think that is actually the time that we spend playing together during those 3 days in May is the most important thing, more than any one contribution any of us can make.
Wonderful, wonderful. And what's your favorite quote around play and playful encounters?
Oh, there are so many. There are so many. I thought about earlier in this conversation we had, and also considering that you're in Germany, there's this German philosopher, he's dead, but he was called, I don't know if this is pronounced right, but Eugen Fink. And he has, he writes about play, and he has this one very short sentence where he says, play gives us the present. And I think that's a beautiful way to think about it, that what play does is that it reminds us to be present in this here and now, and that's the only way it works. Like, it only ever really works if we dare to be fully present here and now together. So I think that's one of the many quotes about play that I really like, that play gives us the present.
But yes, it really feels like we could, you know, add another 50 minutes to this conversation, but it also feels right to slowly close and to just recap of that unhiding play through, yes, meeting other unhiders, other players, meeting the play community, but definitely, you know, looking at the program and seeing who's out there, and knowing that you're not alone when you're doing this, no matter in which context and no matter for which target group or even, you know, personally, noticing and cherishing all those moments where we are present, especially in these days, for whatever that means. I recently started paternity leave, right? And I sometimes say this is, the moment where play became very serious, right? Because that's the thing, right? To see the world in different, through different eyes, yes. And teaching to learn and to eat and all those things is also wonderful, wonderful and playful. You know? Wow. Any final famous? Oh, yeah. Look, wait a minute. Let me ask you one thing, because sometimes I close, and I know that there's a lot already in what you said with being present, with inviting and cracking and, you know, leaving room for playful moments and encounters. But what makes it work? I mean, those playful encounters when two human beings or more, a group, huh? And you even mentioned, you know, other species that could be part of, you know, provoking or inspiring or reminding us about our playful soul, huh, for whatever that means. What really makes it work? What's the magic sauce? Even though I know that even research cannot fully answer that question, but I do believe that every one of us in the community has a piece of the answer, and at one point we must put it together. So what's your current answer on what's the magic sauce of, or the magic ingredients of playfulness, playful encounters?
Of course, this is an impossible question, and I agree that we all have our little, sure, sort of pieces of the, yes, puzzle, and I think that's actually important to consider. But I think for me, of course, there are a few things. I think we need to be able to set up a space where play is safe enough, because all kinds of things might happen when we play, so we need to be safe enough from the outset. And I don't know exactly how to do this, other than sort of really trying to help people feel safe in that space, to create conditions for this not to be super stressful or super intimidating, but that we actually feel, okay, this is something that we can step into. And voluntarily so, of course, we need to make it an invitation so that people might accept that invitation. And then I've also been very interested in how do we invite, like, what are the materials that we can use, also the physical materials, how do we bring the body into play? Like, I have this big interest in these sort of junk playgrounds, adventure playgrounds also, where there are all sorts of materials that are surprising and that somehow also do something to us or push us back. So I think for me, a lot of it is also getting the body involved in surprising ways that helps us move out of our heads, that helps us sort of let go of the rational argument and all that, because our bodies respond in maybe less rational ways sometimes, right? So how do we create a safe space where we allow our bodies to do that? I think that's, for me, a big part of it. And then, yeah, there are so many other things, right? But I think the setting up the invitations, the way that you frame it in a way where it's at least hopefully, potentially meaningful and tempting for people to step into that space. Once we get going, then I think a lot of it sort of happens in the moment, but it's the initiation that is sometimes difficult.
Wonderful. Wow. And, you know, to all our listeners, if you want to meet Matthias and the community and talk about, you know, how to have more playful lives and how to, you know, unhide playful moments and the whole, not only experience, but explore that landscape of play and playfulness. Definitely have a look at Counterplay, or just reach out. You know, not everyone has to come to calling now, but of course, just reach out to Matthias and other members and start that conversation and you know, share back. I think that's also an important thing. Matthias, well, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thank you so much, Julian, for inviting me and for creating this space for also a kind of play and thinking about play. I think this is also a very valuable contribution to standing up for play. So I'm very happy to have been a small part of that.
Wonderful. Well, thank you. Yes, to all our listeners, there's many, many more episodes out there and many, many more communities and conferences out there, right? And festivals out there. And you know, if there's anything you need to know or want to discuss, I'll link your contact details, Matthias. Again, you can always reach out to me. And until then, have many more playful moments. Bye-bye.
You can reach us at hello@keylearning.net. We're looking forward to your suggestions, comments, and feedback.